Hello and welcome to the ILC Home webinar series. My name's Alan Souter. I'm the chair of ILC. I'm delighted to welcome you along. First of all, I guess a huge big thanks to our home corporate partners, that's Carpenters, CoreLogic, Innovation Group and ICAP. Really pleased to have your support, but even more pleased to have you listening along with us for something that I hope will be helpful to everybody who works in home claims. The idea of the podcast series is to chat to a few people, understand a few more of the areas that home claims get involved in, hopefully some entertaining stories as well as very informative ones. Very important that you give us any feedback, so please just give me a note at alan@iloveclaims.com. Be delighted to hear from you. But before anything else, let's listen to this week's podcast. And in this podcast, it's a welcome back to the subject of subsidence. You'll recall just a few weeks back, actually, it was on the 30th of July, we took a look at the situation and we were a bit sort of undecided on whether this would, wouldn't, or what sort of claim year it would be as the summer began to dry. Since then, we've, of course, had lots of dry weather until this weekend. You can almost see it in the ground, certainly in the southeast where I live, you can. So we're going to take the reaction today, get a bit of an update from the guys, see what it looks like, and sort of what plans we might have to put in place and some of the challenges we get, as always. So is it going to be a spike? Is it not going to be a spike? Is it going to be a slight increase? What are the odds? I don't think there'll be any betting on it. And see what effect COVID-19 still might not have on the situation. So we have today, Michael Lawson. Welcome back to Michael. We've got Alex Finch from GeoBear, Nick Turner from Claims Consortium Group, and Alan Milburn. Welcome back from Covia. Mike and Alan were on the original webinar that did it. So let's get going then, Mike. I've closed the window here, but it's been very wet over the weekend after being unbearably hot and dry for several weeks. What impact is that going to have, and what are things looking like now?
I think when we last spoke, we were all talking about the cuss, and really the weather from that moment had flipped. We saw a really quite unusual period, 7-8 days in a row above 30 degrees, central London above 34 degrees, without any rain. So the Morex responded, it raced up to just shy of 300. It will have gone over the top of that very quickly days after. And then we've had in terms of the heat cap, an awful lot of moisture in that system, which has produced those continental flows of thunderstorms that have proceeded north. So in terms of our planning and our thinking, we certainly saw the type of hot weather that probably now, in my view, bakes in a spike. An uplift. We were talking anyway that this was very much a south and east phenomenon when we last spoke, and that's still true. The trees themselves will respond to all that water because they're lazy. Trees, people don't think of that, but trees are lazy. If there's easy water to access in the upper few hundred, give me that every day of the week, they'll say, than trying to take water from 1, 2, or 3 metres down in heavy clay soils with low oxygen. So this water will pause the Morex, but we're up at 300. And really now I think it's the size for me, the size of the uplift, that will be the key.
Okay. Well, that's what we're all going to have to plan for. Alan, I know that this, as it's not nationwide, doesn't occupy all your pay. But if it is concentrated in the southeast, plan for what now seems an uplift, but still very much an unknown uplift.
Yeah. We're still on a cusp, as Mike said last week and again this morning. We have got almost a country of two halves. So, you know, the southeast has always been in the forefront on subsidence. It arrives first, stays, gets its worst down there and stays longer. The thunderstorms we've had, as Mike says, it's going to knock the top off it. It's what's going to happen over the next few weeks. From a supply point of view, our suppliers are poised, ready to take any extra upload going forward. We're not into the true early surges that we've had in the past, where we'd already have been seeing hundreds and hundreds of claims rolling through the door. But we're certainly going to see a seasonal upturn. It's just how much of a seasonal upturn is it that we're going to see? And we still, nobody actually knows, is the real rub, isn't it? You know, we are so much weather dependent. The question I'd like to ask Mike, if we can, is when we've got hot, humid weather, the trees are obviously wanting more water, but equally, they can't transpire as much when the humidity is high. Does that actually decrease the water demand of individual trees compared with a drying wind, which we've had in past years?
It's hugely complicated, Alan. You've just outlined there the range of issues that occur. But overall, once temperatures go above 25 degrees, that's a trigger in terms of plant response at air temperature, then you will see enhanced evapotranspiration. Remember, the water moves from the soil, Alan, as a mass flow. There's a reservoir, a sponge in the soil. There are a set of tubes to the atmosphere, and there is a gradient between the two. The hot temperatures really force every leaf to have to work very hard. And to be honest with you, I don't think drying winds can have the opposite effect, in that they tend to close tomato. The buffeting around the leaf tends to make the leaf close quicker. An open system, a still system, actually is the perfect transportation approach in terms of loss of water. But I really think that in plant response terms, don't ignore that when you get above 30 degrees and then get into the mid-30s, then the plant is under tremendous hour-by-hour pressure. What we saw in those, that sort of week 10 days, was many trees wilting. That's their final response, is to throw the leaf downwards to face away from the sun to try and prevent water loss. So very complicated, but really, I think that was a very significant spike in temperatures. There was drying days, drying episodes, there was moisture in the air. That will have forced a lot of plant response in the soil, which is baked in, which is happening now. And what will rise over the top of that is that water that's hit the ground from storms will produce a response as well. Complicated, but overall, I think that was a significant period of drying, and I think that will be reflected in the responses of adjusters in the field for weeks to come.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, just a practical note, somebody lives in the target area of the southeast. There are a lot of leaves have hit the ground in the last week. And if I show somebody goes out dog walking through and things like that, then that's certainly a practical note. But okay, Nick, well, you know, when you're in the supply side, you've got to be ready for this, and there's a whole load of other stuff going on at the moment on both sides of the business. What are you doing to be ready for what could be anything from a small spike to a major spike in just a few weeks' time? How do you as a supplier prepare for that?
I think we've already seen more claims coming in at the moment than we did last year, not up to the 2018 levels, but certainly in the last month, we've seen probably 15 to 20% more than last year. So we've been looking at this as well, thinking about how we're going to do it in the future, and we'll come on to the COVID situation as well in a minute. There's this virtual visits. What we try and do is do a proper triage right at the beginning, because the claims are coming all over the country, but we've just been talking about one particular area. And it's identifying those where we think there's probably going to be some work to do, and those that we can probably talk to the customer and repudiate fairly quickly. And for us, that's always been the key in working efficiently. But come a surge, it's just that much more important. So we've taken a few people on in anticipation, but just as part of our growth model anyway, so that these are experienced people, not people we've got to train. So we're taking on people to train for the longer term, but we need experienced people now for this short term in case something happens, but they're going to add value anyway. So there's some of the things that we've been doing.
Yeah, it's difficult when we're unsure. I'm going to go to Alex next. Now, Alex is one of the people that first tried to educate me and probably failed miserably, you'll say, which was in the days when we were still dealing with a phenomenal backlog from the 95 sort. And I'm talking now in 1998, when we were still dealing with that backlog in huge amounts. You, despite your youthful experience and your new beard, you've been through this a few times. Where are you sitting in this? What do you see happening?
Yeah, you're right, Alan. I mean, going back to 98 and 03, and I remember Mike Lawson doing little walk around North London explaining about the trees and doing all that sort of stuff back in 98, which was great, brings back some memories. But thinking about the different events so far and since then, in 2018 in particular, that felt like a big event. And there's quite a lot of work still out there from 2018 for various reasons. There's still a fair bit there from 2019. And if we're on for what might be a southeast spike, perhaps in September and October, that's what it feels like. And listening to the other guys talking, maybe they're thinking similar. But I called two or three adjusters at the end of last week in preparation and to get their views on it. Interesting that Nick's seen an upturn, because they were saying they've seen no real spike as yet, and they're not implementing their surge plans as yet either. So it's, I guess we're still in that awkward position of, do we need to move to surge plan or not? Don't know. My guess is it's going to be perhaps a bigger September, October. Not an event, but a decent spike. And that's obviously going to add pressure. So we've got 2018, 2019, longer tail claims still there. And now we've got probably an upturn coming. And you've got contractors, and we haven't got to COVID yet, furloughed, slightly smaller, slightly nervous about going inside properties. They've got a backlog anyway. So I think it's all going to be about how we can deal with the last 2 years before we can even get to a 2020 upturn. So I think we've got a big challenge coming. And I guess we're in that challenge already with COVID. But I suspect we've got a big 12 months coming.
I suspect we have, one way or another. And that can be added to. Don't forget, it can be floods in autumn and big winds blowing as well. I'm trying not to paint too bad a picture here. Mike, we shared on the ILC publications in the last week a report that you put together with one of your colleagues about a claims analysis for the 2018-2019 sub-spike. What are the main parts that are in that actually are going to refer or affect the position that we're going to get in with whether it's a small or big surge in 2020?
It's really interesting question. I think for all the guys, one thing we said last time, which was reflected in the paper we prepared, that the industry and the experience we've got had managed to clear, I think Alan's term, the low-hanging fruit. You know, we'd done the job well of the early wins. I think it's interesting that one of the biggest finds from our work now, looking at our own statistical data and looking at that report, I'm wondering about all of those harder cases, all of those statutory cases that didn't get cleared up in the summer and autumn of 19 and were still being investigated, monitored, with local authorities, highway authorities, statutory planning authorities. And I think you're going to see a lot of those cases that haven't even managed to get to a final repair decision start to go pop. And that whole Alex and Alan, we know full well, Nick, expectation is so important. So a huge finding for us was that there's still that percentage, very small percentage of more contentious larger trees, which might be a tiny proportion of the percentage of claims, but probably eat into a big chunk of budget. And when we looked at all of the other easy claims, the big standout point is that the expectation of local authority and the public that subsidence is caused by great big amenity trees of huge size and vigour and stature just isn't true. What we suffer and what we fix quickly in the low-hanging fruit are the cherry trees and the cypress hedges and the hawthorns and the birch trees, and we sweep all of them up and get them into repair. And then we're left with these complex claims that have got a journey left or right of, do you go and engineer a solution, or do you have a local authority that appreciates the pressure that the people living in those homes are facing? A real point for everyone. We are receiving letters from local authorities that are saying, dear applicant, you'll appreciate the COVID crisis is putting huge pressure on our staffing, and therefore we won't get back to you in any foreseeable future. And we're now writing back to them and saying, dear local authority, your residents have been sat at home staring at cracks now for most of this year, trapped in their houses. And can't you show some common sense and perhaps fast track these cases to save the public purse and to save the stress on our policyholders? So I think those claims are the ones that really worry me this autumn as causing more stress and distress for many people. And I really would, any local authority listening to this podcast, I'd say, show a little bit of common sense and let's see some removals that remove the stress on the public purse and people in houses.
You've just given me another audience to try and advertise to there. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
Alan, you know, picking up on both Mike's and Alex's points here, and Nick's as well. So we've got some justice saying can't see an increase. We've got Nick and his team saying, well, I've seen a bit of an increase. We heard last week from insurers on our webinar that suppliers that although normal claim levels have returned to business as usual for insurers, that's not passing through to the supply chain particularly. So contractors still aren't being fed, and as Alex says, are operating at limited capacity with some pretty severe financial deadlines coming up against them with deferred taxation, furlough, loan repayments, etc. Is this form part of an insurance company's thinking when they're trying to look at the possibilities of having an increased demand from a subsidence spike, or even, you know, I know this passes on to you onto even a flood or something like that. Is there enough cohesion within the thinking to help these people out, or is that really a tough box for us to look at?
I think, you know, the fact that suppliers aren't getting the work is not from an insurer perspective, because we want, as an insurer, I want to get the claims pushed through as quick as possible, whether it's a flood, repairs from a break-in, or subsidence. You know, we don't want claims literally clogging up the system, our policyholders, and particularly on subsidence, sitting looking at the cracks because they can't go outside. The problem is there has been that suppressed demand to get works ongoing, and a lot of policyholders have turned around and said, I don't want anybody coming into my house just yet. And that's the big problem. The construction industry is gradually turning itself around and mobilizing accordingly, but they can't do the repairs and we can't get them into the properties. And it's at the end of the day, it's the householder's home. Nobody can do anything to his house or her house without their permission. So we have got a hard hump to get over in that respect. And I can't personally see an easy way to do it, because, you know, if they're happy to live with the damage, you know, for an indefinite period till we can get people in, then that's their call. It's their house. You know, cash settlement sounds great, but at the end of the day, we want to treat our policyholders fairly, and cash settling something and leaving them with cracks and a chunk of cash, is that the right way to go? They've still got the cracks to look at. We've still got to get people to go in and do the works. So again, I think, you know, particularly on substance where we have structural repairs, I am very reluctant to see us agreeing cash settlements, because we know they won't necessarily be done properly. I would rather have a BRN repair network or a qualified builder to go in and do the appropriate repairs. Yes, we could leave the decorations if that's what they want to the householders, but realistically, most of them, when you talk and say, when we come in, can we do the whole thing? But there's no easy rub to do that. I think the big thing that we easy fix to that, should I say, I think the big thing we can, as insurers, have to do is make sure that we pay people quickly. There should not be an age debt situation unless there's a major query. And even if there's a query on an invoice, pay most of it. We shouldn't be saying, there's a £30,000 invoice for sake of argument. I've got a query over two pots of Dulux. That's not appropriate. Pay most of it. Keep the contractors, you know, keep their cash flow going. Because if not, we could kill them as an industry.
And I certainly think that's a big challenge at the moment. And while I think there has been an improvement on a bit of a focus on it, I don't think insurers necessarily don't pay or don't play slowly. I think it's elsewhere.
Well, that's Alex, that is the thing. Yeah, very much we see that when, you know, a contractor rings us up at my organisation, it's like, oh, you've missed an invoice. So I was like, well, have we got the invoice? And we found that it's been, we dig back, and occasionally, yes, we've made a mistake. There's been current coming in a flurry of post, and that invoice has been missed. But more often than not, it's been sitting on some adjuster's desk, and they've forgotten to send it to us because we want to pay within 3 or 4 days of receipt.
Nick, you kind of sit in the middle of all of this. You've worked for insurers, you've worked for suppliers, you are a supplier, also have suppliers yourself. Where do you sit all of this? Two fronts. One, obviously, the cash flow issue is a major one. And the second one is, are we going to have enough contractors left and ready to be able to carry out this work when it comes in, given some of the challenges that Alex quite rightly pointed out earlier are going to exist for them?
Yeah, I mean, we've been working on the repairs from the previous couple of years. And during the lockdown period, we did a lot of work behind the scenes to get things ready. We've been working with Alex as well to look at alternatives. So whereas, you know, you might be thinking, right, we've got to wait for the tree work, or we've got to wait for this, then there are other solutions out there, GeoBear being one of them. But our contractors, yes, we went through the period when the contractors had staff on furlough. That's all, as far as in our business now, everybody's back. There was a backlog of work, so stuff they had to finish that was nothing to do with subs. And we had to get them lined up for that as well. But we did that during the sort of dead period, so that as soon as the customers, we maintained contact with the customers, as soon as they were ready, and some of them were bored with looking at the cracks, to be honest, and put undue pressure on the other way. Why can't you get out here now, sort of thing? So we had to deal with that. Well, that was good because it's allowed us to plan all of these repairs that we had lined up, and they're well underway now. So we wanted to do that because we also thought if there's a surge coming, we need to be in a good position to be able to deal with that as well. So from a capacity point of view, from the builders, we're fine. We're really happy. We've been working ahead, thinking ahead, and it's starting to pay off. From cash flow point of view, we've always been very keen, the same as Alan, to pay the builders as quickly as we can. We actually pay them. We don't have adjusters dealing with subs claims. We do that. So we can control those payments as well. And working with clients like Kaveh, we don't have a problem. We don't get things held up. Yeah, there's the odd thing gets missed and what have you, but that's fine. But we're quite happy to pay our builders if we've missed something, you know, the next day. Mm-hmm. We can do that because Alan's quite right. We can't afford to make these builders suffer. Apart from that, it buys us a bit of loyalty knowing they're going to get paid, and that buys capacity, and that allows us to service our clients.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But overall, over to you, Alex, on this one. What effect do you think COVID-19 is having? Because I think we're touching on it. but I think we're all a bit worried about, or worried, just nervous about getting into too many of the possible outcomes that might cause us challenge. And secondly, as somebody who's managed contractors, knows about contractors as well as other things, it's fine. I mean, it's great to hear Alan and Nick talk about the cash flow being good and what they're doing. But if everybody else isn't doing the same to the common suppliers, then it still sounds dangerous to me. What's your view?
Yeah, initially on the COVID, I mean, we've touched upon it, but with our work, it was, I guess, we were fortunate because we're mainly working outside and we could work through the, pretty much work through as normal with obviously some different health and safety provisions. But with the your general building contractors who couldn't get into properties there and then were struggling to get materials, that is going to be elongated and they're going to have those problems going forward. I mean, we've touched upon that. So that problem hasn't gone away. And to be honest, we could be talking about similar sort of obstructions with COVID next spring. So we've got to take that one on the chin and do work with customers as best we can. And as has been pointed out, if they don't want them in the property, then they're not going to be able to do the work. So we're going to have that backlog, you know, best will in the world, whether we like it or not. I think a key part of this, and I'm sure Nick's covered this with his own network, but building networks, I think, need to have maximum communication with their builders at the moment and help them with their capacity planning over the next 3 months. Give them some assurance, you've got this tranche of work coming through. If you combine that with good early payments, that's going to give the confidence if they need to resource more or they've got to start getting more materials in, they've got the cash to do it, and they've got that confidence that the work is coming to them. Sometimes the builder at the end there is kind of waiting for his instructions. I think, you know, good networks will do close capacity planning with them so they can have the confidence to build it and get the resource right. And that's going to be key in the next few months.
Back to you on that one, Nick, because I think that's quite key, because rather than just a network, of course, you've got the whole operation. So surely you should be able to plan in advance when the repairs are likely to start. If it's
exactly
on roof, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's what I mean. That's the work we were doing while things were shut down. Getting planned, talking to the builders to give them that confidence that, you know, you've got people on furlough, don't lay them off because we've got all this work. This is what we've got in these areas. So we've been very specific. And the contractors we used for subsidence for the superstructure repairs in particular are a closed group. They're not all the contractors. So it's, you know, easier in some ways to deal with 20, 30, 40 of them rather than the whole network. I just want to pick up on a point, Alex, as well, that we haven't, or I didn't mention until now, and that is the materials side of it. Plaster in particular has been a bit of an issue because British Gypsum closed down. Now it's the other one. But it's starting to pick up. And what we talk to our contractors about, and this is the communication bit, Alex, is what are you doing about this? This is, you know, how are you going to keep supplies of these sorts of materials going? And lots of our builders, being smaller builders, have great relationships with their local merchants. And they get a phone call to say, oh, we've got a lorry load of plaster coming in, how much do you want? And they buy up front, knowing we have this work coming. So it's exactly what you said, Alex. And, you know, thanks for reminding me. The other point, of course, is we're now thinking of Brexit. What happens if there's a messy Brexit exit? And there's going to be more strain on materials at that point. So, you know, we could be heading for the perfect storm of shortages because of COVID, shortages because of Brexit, and a surge.
I have to say, I'm impressed that you can say Brexit exit all in the same. Not an easy.
I've been practicing.
I've not seen this as before lunchtime, Nick, but no inference implied there. Alan, I'm still sort of in my head, knowing with the work that I do as a consultant with insurers and suppliers, I'm still not convinced that we're going to get the right cash through at the right time. So, okay, you know, Nick said, look, we're in control, we can get the cash quickly. You're saying, right, well, you're in control, you can get the cash quickly. I'm still worried that the demand is going to become much, much higher all of a sudden when we're going to have to start advance cash. For example, in the webinar last week, we talked to, I think it was Peter Wassell, had said that wouldn't it be fantastic if the contractors could really do with a summer, a winter blow as well to get it through. And of course, if a storm comes, contractors have to lay out even more cash unless somebody gets up a very good inventive early payment system. So I'm still worried that COVID will restrict supply naturally, because there are not as many people working, but also for cash flow. And I'm still concerned that insurers are going to have trouble getting the right people to repair the right thing at the right time. How big a concern? I know everyone's concerned. I know you're not going to tell us. It's really worrying. But how big an action point is it from insurers and your points of view to make sure that everybody gets things forward to suppliers in readiness for anything happening?
Well, yeah, we've got... I'm speaking industry-wide now rather than just for us. You know, there are numerous entities out there. There are numerous BRNs out there. There are individual builders out there who work for policyholders directly, etc. Each one pulls and pushes in different ways overall. And you know, we can ask the likes Nick and his company or our other suppliers. They can trigger their surge plans. That's not a problem per se. But we don't know where it is, how it's going to fit. You know, we think it's going to be, we're going to get that spike in the southeast. So it's not much use having asked a supplier in Scotland to trigger a surge plan. It's much more localized. So we have effectively hotspots, don't we, on there. This building repair networks can flex their own people sometimes. It happens particularly when we had widespread flooding. BRN have pulled people in from all over the country to concentrate on floods. So again, that could be done if we needed to on a major substance spike, shall we say, in the southeast on that. But that would be up to the BRNs to actually be able to control it. From past years when I've been involved more at the coalface, BRNs have turned up at a major flood event and the local contractors have said, well, why can't we have the work? But then the tenants, oh, well, you could, but look at, you know, A, you say you're worked up for 3 or 4 weeks. That's not much good to us. We need people to get in very quickly. And the other thing is you say, well, you know, there is a cost element sometimes to this. And I've seen it in the past that local contractors have put in ridiculously high prices, almost like ransom, and a BRN have come in and said, no, we'll do it at an enhanced cost, because they are, you know, if they're pulling people in from all around, there is, you know, there are increased costs of working, which we would, as insurers, would have to accept. We can't expect massive amounts of work in a small area and then look to just maybe paying what would have been business as usual rates. And I think, you know, what we've also got to think about is that, you know, if we do get into a surge event of sorts and we know what the schedule of works is, as an insurer, we're not averse to paying upfront on a percentage upfront on a, as we would do on a flood event, to facilitate and keep the cash flow going for the supply, for the building networks, and therefore cascade down to their suppliers. You know, it would be pointless for us to starve them of money and say, well, we're only going to pay on submission of an invoice, which means that the BRN and their subcontractors have run out of credit at the merchants, and then they're robbing Peter to pay Paul all the time. That's not doing anybody any favours. You've got to take a more holistic view of this. And I hope other people in the industry in my position would do the same sort of thing.
Well, I think there's certainly a will to do that. We're coming to the end of our time now, so I'm going to go back to Mike quite deliberately last. 2 points, Mike, because I know you've covered this before. One, what do you think the effects of COVID-19 are going to be? And the forecast you can see for economies, given some of the other industries you work in. And secondly, and I'll get you back in September, if you were a betting man, which of course you're not, if you were a betting man, where would you be laying your odds on the size of surge that we might be going to see this time?
Well, on the first point, I don't think we should underestimate. I don't think anyone on this call underestimates the anxiety amongst policyholders. We feel it every day. And that anxiety, I think it's incredibly complex now, because the anxiety can be both to not enter the property or to enter quickly, you really now have a situation where a whole load of people have just returned back from countries in France and Spain and are on a 14-day lockdown. This feels to me very much like the new normal. We've got the kids. It is alleged that the children will all go back to school in September. But we know that schools themselves may become local lockdown positions. Cities the size of Leicester completely locked down, create new problems in supply in those areas. I mean, for all of us, Lord knows what happens if it breaks out in London again and we have the inner M25 in lockdown. You know, you couldn't really paint a tougher picture for customer care and customer engagement than this year. And I think one of the biggest challenges for us is to have that empathy for our staff going and having to do these visits and the pressure they're under with their own families and the families themselves. And we often are dealing with third party details and third parties who are now in shielding or lockdown or returned from holiday. So a very complicated position, I think. I think the other thing is, rather than be a better man, let's look at it this way. From 2003, 4, 5, 6, we had that elevated period. The guys, some of us go back 95, 6, 7, 8, and some of us go back 90, 91, 92. You know, there's a group of people here who've seen it all, really. What it feels to me, and what the data shows, is that from 2017, the weather is moving more to dry. So the summers are still getting those intense bursts of rainfall, and the rainfall's changed. The rainfall is now coming for you in Essex, Alan. I'll bet you saw a shed load of rain very quickly. It came, it went. So those events are creating problems of flash flooding and surface water flooding and entry of water into homes, which are beginning to suffer cracks. So where are we at? I think Alex and I'll remember 2003, 4, 5, and then 6 came on as another warm year and an elevated claims experience. I feel that this is one of those years that is in that 2006 category. It came after an event. There was plenty of properties on the edge of going. And as a betting person, I will say Southeast is going to see some significant crack damage. I think one thing I'd say to everyone, when it does go, a property goes, I would expect it to be pretty dramatic this year. So perhaps a lot of properties suffering structural damage that's at the severe end of a problem, particularly coming after 18 into 19 and then 20, where we've had these very high elevated temperatures on the most shrinkable soils, as Alex would be able to tell you very easily. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see from Nick and his lot repudiation rates begin to fall. That's, I think, a needed. As the repudiation rates fall, I think there's a lot of dry opportunities in September and October. So for this team here, for all those reasons, and for the whole industry, you know, please treat it seriously as a major possible event year, although isolated in the south and the east.
Okay, Mike, thanks. To Mike, Alex, Alan and Nick, thanks a lot. We're going to keep an eye on this. We'll be talking to Mike and a few others again in early September to see what it's got to. We'll keep the graphs coming through, because this is a watching situation, especially with all the other things that are happening around about it. Thanks for it, for your contribution. I appreciate your time today. You've been listening to an IOC Home Claims podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Look forward to you joining us again soon. Thanks, guys. Really enjoyed that. Bye.